In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Welcome. So we've got Finland, Denmark, and Bavaria. Antonia, you're trying to digitalize the free state of Bavaria. What is your biggest challenge right now?
Well, there are a lot of challenges right now. I think if there weren't any challenges, we would be much more digitized as we are right now. I think the biggest challenges are actually the legacy systems that we have in place, because if we want to implement new technologies, the legacy systems are sometimes not able to work with the new technologies, and we have to find ways to deal with that. So that means either we have to convince people to change the legacy systems, or we have to find workarounds how to deal with the legacy systems and still use modern technology. Or in other ways, we have to set up our own systems in order to make sure that the technology that we want to use can be used.
Thomas, we just heard about cyber threats and everything that is linked to that. When we are talking about public data and digital identities, what do you think, what do we have to do to make sure that privacy and data security is still working in the end?
Well, first of all, I think we need to do everything we can to obviously keep our data safe, both from a cyber standpoint, also from a privacy standpoint. You know, Denmark is one of the most digitized societies. There is a ton of data. And what we're finding is, of course, we are under attack like everybody else. But really, that's not what's hurting society the most. It's phishing. It's people being lured into giving away their ID or anything like that. That is really what's creating most problems in Denmark. You know, we do have very good action plans around our ID. It was down yesterday. We know what to do when the ID is not working for an hour or so. There are very, very good plans around that. So I think, you know, this is a fundamental premise that we have to work from. We need to secure our data. We need to work with our data the way it is, and we will be under attack. But I do think, and I want to provoke you guys a little bit, you know, when I am in Germany, this seems to be the burning platform. And I understand this is important, and I understand the German history. I do understand the importance of that. But if that becomes your burning platform, it will be very, very difficult to move ahead, because you will sit and wait for the perfect framework around security to make the next solution. You know, in Denmark, we certainly have a lot of focus on this, but we have a lot of focus on other things, burning platforms like saving money, like the demographic development, like all those things that will be contributors in driving this development. So this is important. It's a very important subject, but there need to be other drivers when we develop our solutions.
Mikael, you're from Finland, so you've got a pretty good picture of Nordics and Scandinavia. I always have the feeling, if you look at Bavaria or Germany in general, we are always very hesitant when it comes to doing stuff online, when it comes to private data, to our digital identities. Why are countries like Finland so much more open, or like societies like the Finnish one, more open to actually all kinds of e-government activities and initiatives?
Complicated question. I'll try to address that from a point of view of a little bit of the strengths that we, I think, have in Finnish society, in Finnish, building the Finnish digital society. And I think they are similar to Denmark, and Thomas can comment on it, I guess, later on. Finland is number one in digital and economic and societal index, which is the EU Commission for metric for digital societies. Denmark is number two, I think. Germany, I wouldn't go as far as a burning platform, but a little bit behind. I think the things that make Finland such a good country to build digital services, especially public digital services, is that we have the digital identity, and we've had that for a long time. Finland was very early on in online banking, and that's something that given us a digital identity, basically, for all Finns, or almost all Finns. We do have the national registries in much better shape than I understand that you do have here. So that's pretty much about the legacy systems that Antonio mentioned. For example, to have a national level population registry to depend on, that is good, valid data. That's something good to build on. And I think one important thing is also that Finland went early on in investing into digital data interchange architecture. Basically, for us in Finland, it meant that we went into the open source extra technology together with Estonia and have managed to build the hard and soft infrastructure that needs to be in place there for data interchange, real time, not always real time, but going into that direction for data interchange. And those are pretty important building blocks when thinking about what kind of public services you can build into the digital sphere.
Thomas, yesterday we talked about the power of Europe and if we actually use it. When it comes to e-government, I'm not sure if we are that good because every country is working on its own systems. We are very bad at learning from each other, at least from my outside perspective. Maybe Antonia can add something to that later. But what would you say? Why are we so bad at learning from each other and like reusing systems that have been developed in another country?
So I think it is kind of hard to explain, but it's almost like the digital space has become like an individual sport. Like everybody has to have their own. They're very special. They have to deliver on their own special way. And in Denmark, you know, I've had many, many discussions, both with politicians and with, you know, government bodies around why it's so important to consider digital infrastructure like physical infrastructure. You know, just imagine if we allowed every municipality to decide how their power was going to be, how they were going to drive on the roads, the society would not work. It really isn't that different in the digital world. If we want, as digital citizens, to be able to move around, use the facilities that we build, I mean, we cannot build many, many, many different solutions and require the user, like myself, to understand how to tie this together. We as organizations, we as government, need to be able to do this in a standardized way. Now, we're struggling with this in Europe. And I think the EU is at least trying now to push some of the things with the identity wallet. So they're trying to say we should all have a common identity we can use across in the hope that we will try to level out some of the services. So we basically start using the same services across borders as well. But this is a long road. And it is a road where we all have to take a step back and say, what do we really gain from investing in our own solutions again and again and again, with the tremendous cost that follows there. So I think that the comparison to the physical and the digital universe needs to become much stronger across Europe.
Antonia, what would you say when it comes to European collaboration? If are you looking at other countries? Are you exchanging ideas, maybe even technology?
Yes, definitely. We're looking at other countries. We're looking at Finland, we're looking at Denmark, but also at other countries. But I think it is important that the European Union also creates a unified digital space, not only the unified trade space that we already have in the physical world. But looking at Germany, I mean, it was already very difficult to have a unified space, or we're still working on having a unified space and having a unified identity for all the 16 states. I remember a couple of years ago, each of the 16 states had their own identity systems for digital services. And just recently, a decision was taken that in the future, only one digital identity will be used, the federal one. That depends on Bavarian technology, which is nice to say as as someone representing Bavaria. But I think we still have a long way in Germany to create this unified space within the federal states.
If I can add something to this discussion about EU, I think that one of the big reasons is that we are, as EU and member states, the maturity of where we are in terms of digitalization is just so different. And the time frames are so short that this happens over a decade, this happens over 5 years, and we started at different times. So naturally, we are different maturities, and that makes it a little bit harder. I think the solution would be, as you said, learning from each other and looking more to each other to really take advantage of the single market that we have.
Mikael, you're the CEO of Gofore, so you are working on a lot of, I would call it, public projects, e-government projects. Can you share some insights on what solutions you've been working on over the last couple of years?
Yes, as you say, we at Gofore work quite a lot with the Finnish public sector in building these services, and I'm of course extremely proud and happy that we've been in different capacities able to participate in several projects that I think could be something for the rest of Europe or for the rest of the world to learn from. We have the electronic health archive on a national level. Whatever hospital or whatever doctor you visit, that professional sees the same information about you and your health, and you can control that yourself. We have the drug prescriptions completely digitalized, 100% almost penetration with that. All drugs prescriptions are in digital format. Our tax administration is quite, I think, advanced, which of course always is not good news for us taxpayers, but we have the pre-filled tax reports that they get by gathering all data basically about our taxable incomes. 80% of taxation decisions are done automatically basically, so without any need of human intervention there. But one thing that I wanted to highlight and bring out as an interesting example of that is that what we worked with several big cities in Finland in exploring data about families with children. So what we did was gather data from various sources of various registries that we have of their financial, of their social economic situation, of how they use different services in an anonymized way. So we have this secure platform to combine all this data, and that's something that I think is interesting for the future. How we can build completely new ways of serving the citizens by leveraging this kind of data. We need to do it in a secure, ethical way, and we haven't solved all of those problems yet, I think. But as a proof of concept thing, it was really interesting to see how we can anticipate the service needs of different families, how we can predict the lead or find the leading indicators that predict that these families will be in need of special services for them to manage, how we can use our resources from the public sector in a best way, because we understand what kind of users, customers basically we have out there and who needs the services most, and so forth. So like if we can do this kind of data engineering and understanding of our customers, then we have a pretty perfect playing ground also for different AI solutions that will provide significant value to people, I think.
Antonia, I remember a lunch meeting in Helsinki last year where we met the former CDO of the city of Helsinki, and two of your team members have also been part of that. And he talked a lot about solutions they implemented, and we've been, to be honest, quite surprised by what they are able to do, especially when it comes to privacy and data security and stuff like that. It seemed that either they are not that strict, or we are just a bit lazy sometimes to find solutions to work with GDPR and stuff like that. What's the truth in there? Is it others are not looking at it in a very strict way, or are we just kind of over-interpretating the regulation?
I think it's probably both a little bit. I think German citizens are very aware of data privacy and put the media and the whole debate that is ongoing is focusing a lot on the topic of data privacy, but also the politicians and the administration are taking an easy way out and just, well, okay, that's a reason why we can't do it, and then they don't do it. But if you want to do something, you will find a way to do it. And if you don't want to do it, you find a reason why you won't do it. And so I think in many ways, German administration uses data privacy also just as an argument to be lazy. Yes. But also maybe the whole debate around data privacy needs to change, and we have to have a discussion about like the balance of like, is data privacy more important than saving lives, like we had in during the corona times, during the pandemic? And we need to have discussions about those things. And I think in Germany, the discussion is mostly about like how to keep data privacy and not about what can we do and how can we help citizens and how can we create a better life for people if we use the data.
Thomas, there is a lot we could do with technology, and the range is from Chinese scoring systems to, yeah, digital passports. Is there something you would say we shouldn't go that far? Is there, what would be, like, from your point of view, the moment where we should stop?
Well, I think there's definite discussions there. I mean, obviously, there's the discussion around AI and how far do we want to take it. I was part of a project in 2018, actually, where we did some profiling on kids in one of the municipalities. And basically, based on their data from the dentist at the school, we could pretty well, if we went back in time, predict, based on the health of their teeth, how they were going to be in trouble in the future. We could hit that very closely. Did they actually brush their teeth at night? Did they brush them in the morning? Those kind of indicators. But, you know, from an ethical standpoint, should we really intervene in these kids' lives early on, even though we saw indicators? So these are the discussions. How do we use data? How should we be using data to basically intervene in development we see in society? So I think that is certainly a part of the discussion that's taking place in Denmark right now around the ethics in using AI. And the other thing is, when you use AI, can you really, how traceable is it? How was the decisions made? How did we arrive at this decision? So I think there are considerations around privacy and so on that we have to bring in. But I think we also need to be very good at least bringing this discussion to a place where we know other players in the market, not your government, maybe not me, maybe not Michael, but other players will be offering services in the digital space. And if we do not take charge of delivering these services, somebody else will. And I can just mention some big names like Google and Apple and all these guys that you're all using every day. Now, they do not care much about data privacy. They track you. They do a lot of things. And so we need to talk about, in Europe, how are we going to take charge of our data so we can manage and control the way data is being used? And that is what EU at least is trying to do with the digital wallet, the ID, and the idea that we can carry our own data and we can force the big players that we can use our own national ID to log into Facebook, log into to Google, and we can manage the data. So these are the type of things I think need to take place now so we can start getting control of this. So I see a lot of pitfalls, but I also see possibilities for Europe right now in this space.
I'd like to add to that also that I agree wholeheartedly with Thomas here, of course, but it's also one important question is not necessarily what we shouldn't do, but it's the adoption rate. How do we keep people educated and understanding what we are doing? Because that's something that is a big problem now that we see a constant acceleration of how digital technology and AI especially develops. People don't understand how things work anymore. And that, for me, is a big problem for building equal democratic societies that are based on digital technology.
Antonia, do we need like an ethical, European ethical framework on how we are using public data in the end? Because, you know, there are so many things we could make more efficient with AI, machine learning, all that kind of stuff. And it might sound like a good idea, but if you look deeper into it, there are also risks connected to that.
I mean, with the AI Act, I think we're already on the way there. I mean, the AI Act gives some guidelines on how to use AI and how, like, that you have to, that AI has to be explainable, that AI has to be transparent and without bias. But I would like to get back to what Thomas was saying, the comparison between the analog or the physical and the digital world. I mean, we always forget that people also have biases. People also make mistakes. And like, we always think that we have to have higher standards for the digital sphere than for the analog sphere. Like with digital identities, how easy is it to forge a signature? How easy is it to forge a signature that's an analog signature? I mean, any digital signature is more safe than an analog signature. And like, if I hand over my driver's license with a picture from when I was 18, I mean, I don't look like that anymore. And like, yes, it's some time ago. But I mean, like, how can a person still decide that this is me, this is the same person? And I think the biometric features of like, or the biometric data that can be analyzed by machines are probably more accurate than people. But why do we have so much higher standards for the digital solutions than for the human solutions?
But that is a question. I agree with you also. And I think we should have higher standards for the digital world, but that's another other topic. But that Daniel's question was about EU level guidance for how, for the ethical use of digital technology, AI usually, and privacy things. I think we should have that, but I also think that we tend to go too easily down the regulation road, and that we should start from the top and build the regulation and the guidelines for everyone, and then they follow that. We could do so much more and so much faster by just having better cooperation between countries. And I'd also like to say that the ethical use is not only about the high level rules. We live off building digital services, and I think in that world the ethical decisions should be present every day. That's why we at Gofore, we have a slogan that we are the pioneers of the ethical digital world. So we like to live up to that also. And we built a ethical design guide. I'm not saying that's something that perfect and solves all problems, but I do think that is important that everybody working with these subjects understands the different lenses or the different perspectives on what is ethical in the digital world, like equality, like transparency, like privacy, and so forth. So I urge you to go a look at Gofore's ethical design guide.
Michael, I agree. And I think everybody who builds solutions in these spaces needs to be responsible around what they're building. I think one of the things that I think Germany can learn from what we have seen in Denmark and Norway is really digital inclusion. It's, you know, when I look at Denmark now, the numbers we're looking at is, now that we're so digitized, 20% of our citizens are struggling. And it's the younger generation, it's the older generation. And so recently we had to pass some laws to basically help integrate these parts of our society into the digital sphere now. And that's something like, I can help my parents if they give consent, I can help them in their digital journeys. We have to have more people at service centers basically helping certain people that are struggling. We have to design solutions so a broader part of the population can use them. And these will be important things, because we're actually doing this so this become a more accessible democratic world we're designing. And so the access for everybody needs to be as equal as possible. And these are some of the things that we need to basically learn from the countries that have plowed ahead and have taken a lot of hard lessons and say, how can we bring some of that to our solutions here in Germany, so we start at a completely different place.
We're taking the discussion out of your hands a little bit, but this is such an interesting topic, because the accessibility topic is so important. And I think, at least for us in Finland, we've learned that the hard way. There's studies, there's 5.5 million people in Finland, there's studies that say that at least 1 million of those would benefit from more accessible digital services. That's a huge number, and we're kind of doing something wrong when we have such a big number. So that's an area where we should improve.
Mikael, one final question to you. I recorded a podcast interview with Mikko Ypinen last year, who's also quite a successful cybersecurity expert, I would say. And we talked about quantum readiness and securing digital infrastructures, especially also when it comes to public data and when it comes to all those e-government initiatives. He was like, we should have already started, and time is running out if we want to be ready in time to secure all those critical infrastructures. What would you say, especially when it comes to e-government topics, when it comes to public data, are we ready?
No. I think the simple answer is no, and I think Mikko Hyppönen is absolutely right. War in Europe, I think, made us wake up. And made us also understand that that will not come for free. We need to invest in that, and we're not ready, but getting better, I think. What Thomas said earlier in this discussion was also important, that right now, that is not where we see the biggest problems or the impact of security problems. We see them from like social hacking and just people not understanding their role in the digital space.
Thank you so much for joining us here and all your insights. And then we are coming to our final panel discussion here for this year's 48 Forward Festival. But thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.